The next case on our calendar is 09-1070, Jack Riddell, Danny Six, and Josephine Weldy versus Consolidated Rail Corporation. Mr. Potheiser.
May it please the court, my name is Ira Potheiser. I represent the appellants Norfolk Southern Railway Company and Conrail. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, this is yet another case where the court has been being asked to interpret provisions of the Ohio Asbestos Statute, known as HB 292. The issue that we're discussing today is somewhat novel. It concerns whether a trial court can sever off claims of non-asbestos exposures and hold an expedited trial on those claims when the court has found that the prima facie requirements for moving forward with an asbestos exposure claim have not been met. Both the trial court and the 8th District have determined that it comes within the purview of the statute to be able to sever these claims. Respectfully, we disagree. In preparing for argument today, I got hung up, I think, as a little bit as the lower courts have on the term cause of action. And that term has been thrown around by the courts and has been thrown around, I think, by the appellees. And I wanted to find more authority that can kind of put a little bit of context as to what we're talking about in terms of cause of action. I don't think that, and I don't believe that the term cause of action easily lends itself to having four or five different divisible causes of action, as the appellees have argued to the courts below and to this court. I think it's quite clear from the complaints that are part of the record that for each substance that the appellees are claiming exposure to, they are alleging that each exposure contributed to the same harm. I submit then, Your Honors, that we're really talking about here not six or five or six causes of action, but one cause of action. And that's all related to asbestos.
But are there different claims in that cause of action?
They label it that way, Your Honor. They label one as asbestos exposure, one as diesel fumes, one as silica.
Yes.
But I think under the law, under some definitions that I have found that discuss what a cause of action is, I don't think that you can necessarily, for lack of a better term, chop that up.
But the application of the administrative dismissal is not a dismissal of a cause of action. Isn't it a dismissal of a claim?
That's true, Your Honor. There are portions of the statute, Your Honor, that do say claim. That I believe, is directly in the statute.
It seemed to me that the trial court in this instance determined that it could administratively dismiss the claim for the asbestosis, but the other claims could remain pending within that cause of action.
I believe that's the way they did, the trial court did rule, Your Honor. I would agree that's probably how Judge Hanna viewed it.
But counsel, he says the causes of action, orders, Judge Hanna signs the order scheduling trial, orders that the remaining claims contained in the remaining causes of action and pertaining to substances other than asbestos should be scheduled for trial. So he's using the plurality for claims, and he's using causes of action as opposed to one cause of action.
I can't speak to how necessarily Judge Hanna chose to word cause of action versus causes of action. I would submit that this is one cause of action. I found support for at least my position, Your Honor. I was looking at various cases that define what cause of action is.
Before we get to this, I have maybe a procedural question to ask. I'm presuming that this was anticipated, the severed or the remaining portion was going to be tried before the asbestos judges.
That's my understanding, Your Honor.
And is that docket not a limited docket for special, just for asbestos cases?
That's my understanding, Your Honor.
And these are not asbestos cases. They could be filed with the other general division of the Common Pleas Court in Cuyahoga County.
That would be my understanding, Your Honor.
Has there been a precedent here for cases to be severed like this and the remaining non-asbestos claims brought to trial before one of the asbestos judges?
I am not aware of that, Your Honor, if that's actually occurred.
I mean, procedurally, wouldn't this just, shouldn't it go to being transferred out of this court to the general division?
That's a possibility, Your Honor. I guess Judge Hanna's order specifically said the court, at its convenience. I might be misspeaking a little bit as to what the precise wording of the order is, but I think Judge Hanna contemplated that, assuming that these rest of these claims go to trial, that they would be tried in front of either him or just Judge Spellacy. That's the way I read the judge's order.
But why wouldn't that be an FLEA claim without an asbestos claim contained in it and just on a regular docket? The administrative order only assigns asbestos cases to the special docket.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Well, was there a request to transfer it out of there?
I do not believe there was a request to transfer it off of the asbestos docket.
That's your remedy here? I mean, I guess this question's all raised. The question I had is, you seem in your brief to at least suggest that there's some judge shopping here and that this case was filed as an asbestos case, even though there's not an asbestos issue, so that one could get this, you know, it isn't said, but the judge may be more favorable to the plaintiff in these cases, so the plaintiff is anxious to get their case before Judge Hanna instead of some other taking their chance with another judge in the general division. Is that what's happening? Is that?
I know the amicus did make that argument, Your Honor, as to why these cases were labeled asbestos cases. Go into the amicus argument. The idea is that you could, a plaintiff could file an asbestos claim that they don't really believe in or don't really believe that they can meet that prima facie level just to get on the asbestos docket, attach what I would call rote claims of other exposures just to get in front of the asbestos judge. The asbestos judge then can administratively dismiss, and remember, we're talking administrative dismissal here, where the claim gets parked. It isn't; it's still out there in I would call it judicial netherland, and it could presumably be revived at some point. So because of that potential for reviving the asbestos claim, the whole case remains in front of the asbestos judge. But
while the asbestos claim is dormant or parked, so to speak, the judge is going to go forward with this other causes of action according to the order.
Yeah, and
well, but you're telling me that you don't know of this happening at any other time.
I am not aware of it, Your Honor.
Wasn't that if this is in fact judge shopping and this was the strategy behind the filing? That's pretty risky for the plaintiffs to hang their hat on a new and novel approach to dealing with, you know, the prosecution of a case like this.
I don't think judge shopping is necessarily a new thing, Your Honor. I think, unfortunately, it might be risky. I mean, you always take a risk, but there are many ways that the plaintiff could avoid HB 292 altogether. They could have filed the field claim in federal court. And, you know, then they don't have to worry about the prima facie case. I mean, there might be other issues in terms of summary judgment down the road, But I submit that, you know, there were other ways, there were ways that they could have completely avoided the
right,
statute
another,
altogether.
Another thing that comes through loud and clear is the fact that your complaint is that this is overburdening of the precious time of the asbestos docket and the people that are really in need of the attention of the asbestos judges and this docket are being deprived of that because they're going to be dealing with this non-asbestos. Well, again, the remedy, as the chief mentioned, is shifted over to another court in the general division of the Common Pleas Court that routinely handles these, you know, personal injury cases or however, and you're okay.
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I don't know if you're okay because you still have this asbestos claim still out there. And
which is dormant in and remaining in the asbestos docket.
It could remain in the asbestos docket, but I would submit maybe another remedy would simply to be another possibility for plaintiffs, and as we discussed in the brief, is that a plaintiff could simply just take a voluntary dismissal of the asbestos claim. If he doesn't meet the requirements, if he can't meet the requirements, if he wants to try to move ahead on a different docket other than the asbestos docket, he can take a voluntary dismissal of those claims.
Well, that's not in the statute. The administrative dismissal provides a remedy, and that's been upheld by our court. Why wouldn't this be splitting a cause of action if you divide the asbestos claim from the others and try one in one court and one in another court? Why isn't that splitting a cause of action?
I would say it's not splitting it because I still maintain that it is a single cause of action that we're talking about here, because they're asking, they're basically alleging a whole bunch of different exposures, but one injury as a result of those exposures. So I would say that we're still talking about one specific cause of action.
And is your argument that you can't really try these add-on causes without getting to the asbestos issue because they're so intertwined, yet the asbestos issue is technically now parked, and so you're claiming this is a backdoor way to get asbestos in while it's technically parked? Is that your argument?
Backdoor, yes, because you can't, when you're talking about a whole plethora of exposures that could have caused this one condition, then I don't know how you avoid talking about asbestos in terms of what the actual cause of the impairment is.
In terms of the remedy, because of the structure of the statute and some of our procedural rules, would it require a pronouncement from our court to say that if the asbestos claim is parked, then the other claims have to be transferred to the regular docket because the court set up this the asbestos docket? Would you need us kind of blessing that remedy to avoid a judge dismissing that claim or that motion to transfer?
I would probably not endorse that. I still go for the flat-out administrative dismissal of the entire complaint, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Counsel, don't we have a sort of a multi-step analysis here, don't we? In this particular case, there's the first question is, if you did have an asbestos claim joined with non-asbestos claims, could they be separated if the asbestos was administratively dismissed? That's one question. But the next question is, how were the claims in this case pled? And I did notice that asbestos or asbestosis appears in several of the claims, which raises a question about the pleading in this case. Are they, in fact, separate claims or all a part of the same claim? And then I suppose then you'd get to the third question as well. If they can be separated and they are separate claims, who tries the ones that are not asbestos cases? What are your thoughts on that particular analysis?
Well, once again, Your Honor, I would maintain that despite how it's labeled in terms of first cause of action, and it was done very carefully by counsel, I would still refer this to as one cause of action. I guess if we call this one cause of action that alleges asbestos, I suppose that, at least from where I'm standing, that makes it easier for the court to administratively dismiss the entire case.
But I think the claimant's going to argue that actually have caused different problems, as I recall reading that in the brief, so that it isn't multiple causes of the same problem, but there are at least some different problems.
He does allege different exposures as causing problems, and I know he talks about COPD and other types of conditions. However, though he doesn't mention asbestos in every single one. When you look,
so he mentions asbestos as coupling. Are you saying coupling with these other substances, the toxic substances, diesel, locomotive, sand, and silica, solvents, and other toxic substances? And you say then in each, there's asbestos coupled with each one of those substances to give it one cause of action?
That's the way I read the complaints, Your Honor.
But then the injuries are, you know, asbestosis is just one of them. There's pleural disease, restrictive lung disease, obstructive lung disease, emphysema, asthma, reactive airway disease, fear of cancer and lost wages. They're not saying, and apparently they can't because the asbestos claim is parked, but they're not saying all of these diseases and conditions and the wrongful death are hanging their hat on the asbestos. They're saying the silica and the, you know, the other toxic substances cause these diseases as well.
They do say that, Your Honor. I would say that, but I would say that they all cause these conditions, and you can't necessarily chop one out.
But isn't that for trial to figure out what the causal relationship is, or the testimony will bring that out.
It could bring it out, Your Honor, but once again, you could be having, does this mean, I guess the practical problem that I would have is that, assuming you sever these claims as the plaintiff would suggest, does that mean that asbestos can't be mentioned during a trial on exposure to the other substances? Or does all mention of asbestos get parked while we try the theories as to the non-asbestos exposures? I just think that would be very, very difficult to
do. Counsel, before we had the separate docket, the general division judges in Cuyahoga County heard asbestos cases. And so a case like this would be heard by a general division judge. And if it's not asbestos, it still stays on that docket. They requested a separate docket, requested assignment of judges to a separate docket because obviously the asbestos cases were a burden. And so it was the court's administrative process by which the docket was created, and the Chief Justice then assigned judges. I guess I'm not convinced that we should be telling the Common Pleas Court in Cuyahoga County how they should administer their dockets. I mean, if they want to have a so-called the asbestos judge is a general division judge. He or she just happens to have a separate docket. Why should we? I guess you're not arguing that we should do this, but it seems to me that we perhaps should stay out of their administrative business there. And if they want to have a general division judge who is assigned to an asbestos docket, try a case while one cause is one claim is parked. Why should it be the business of this court to change that?
I don't know if you necessarily have to change it.
We just dismiss it all, then we don't have to get involved in that, do we?
I think if the court would accepts our interpretation, I don't think we're necessarily, I don't think this court is really intervening into how Cuyahoga County chooses to administer its asbestos docket.
If a case is filed in a court of claims, sometimes there are different theories of the cause of action, and one may be that the state is liable, the other is that the state is not liable. But the court of claims hears the case. This seems to me to be a bit like that. That this would not be a precedent to have Judge Hanna, for example, hear the non-asbestos claim.
If I understand your question, Chief Justice Moore, I suppose there's the trial courts should have requisite flexibility to control their dockets, the asbestos docket being one of them. I would suggest, though, that the statute here has a specific structure as to what happens to asbestos claims, as to what happens with non-asbestos claims that have nothing to do with how, you know, whether a special asbestos docket is actually set up.
And isn't that where we're really looking? It's the language of the statute, and of course we have problems because it says tort action, cause of action, claim, case, and it uses those words kind of willy-nilly throughout the statute. But if I understand you, are you saying that if asbestos is mentioned with a single injury, then the entire case gets administratively dismissed, and we know that that's not for all time. It's until the prima facie evidence is there.
That's correct, Justice Lanziger. And one point, I know I realize I'm way over my time, and I apologize.
Continue to answer questions that are posed to you by the justice.
Okay. As I mentioned at the outset, I was looking at cases that kind of bring into focus this question of what's a cause of action. And I found a case over the weekend, and I'll give you the site. It's from the 4th District. It's Evans versus Rock Hill Local School District. It can be found at 2005 Westlaw 2450162, 2005 opinion. And it comes up with these definitions, and if I can just quote, cause of action is to be distinguished from the action itself, which is a judicial proceeding brought in a court of law to vindicate the cause of action. These distinctions are critically important because an action, whether in the form of a complaint, cross-complaint, or counter-complaint, may contain numerous counts, theories, or demands for relief, but still encompass only a single cause of action or claim for relief. For instance, where a person suffers personal injury and property damage as the result of a wrongful act, there is only a single cause of action, even though the complaint asserts counts in battery and trespass. Now, to be fair, this case talked about, it was in the context of a 54B certification, as to, and there's always that dispute as to what constitutes a claim. But I would suggest, and actually this is quoting from a law review article in the opinion, but I would suggest that everything that has been alleged here by the plaintiff is one claim. One claim for relief, one cause of action. And because of that, I think it is indivisible, and the entire case must be administratively dismissed.
Counsel, what do we do with the claim arising from Mr. Weldy, who has passed away, who is not going to have an asbestos claim? What? I mean, to dismiss that claim, because there was no asbestos showing, when there may be a valid claim for another cause, it seems a little strange, I guess, just to keep that one hanging there, doesn't it? At least that one?
As a litigant before this court, Your Honor, I think it's a little, it sounds a little strange too. I would answer that in two ways, Justice Cupp. Number one, that's unfortunately or fortunately the way the statute is set up. Number two, I think in Bogle, one of the claimants there was also a wrongful death situation, and there wasn't any exception made in terms of wrongful death. I do not believe by this court in Bogle. So I think if there is a problem in terms or perceived problem in terms of handling wrongful death claims, that might be something that the legislature needs to correct. Unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Pottheiser.
Thank you.
Mr. Torsello.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio, thank you for allowing me to appear in practice before you today. My name is Michael Torsello. I represent the appellees in this case. With me at council table is Mary Bridget Sweeney. Today's case clearly represents another attempt by the railroad to pound the square peg of an FELA case into the round hole of the Ohio Asbestos Bill. As we can see, it raises numerous issues. The first thing that is important to remember is that these cases were filed back in 2004. These cases were filed before there was an asbestos bill. So any allegations that unsubstantiated allegations have been tacked on here to avoid the Ohio asbestos bill is clearly not right. There was no asbestos bill at the time these cases, this complaint was filed. In the Danny Six case, it was filed right around the time of the enactment of the statute, at such time when the court had held that FELA cases did not come under the rubric of the statute. So it's important to understand these cases were filed long before this statute ever came into effect.
But you now have the statute and you have this parking situation. Can you envision any asbestos case that you wouldn't be able to add on an extra claim for another cause from diesel fume, sand, all the things that you allege that would defeat the asbestos tracking? I mean, my concern, I understand both sides very clearly, but my concern on the railroad side is you may have done this before 2004, but what will prevent any new plaintiff filing a claim from adding a bunch of extra claims to make sure they don't get parked?
I think, Your Honor, it comes down to the proof. And in this case, much has been made of the complaint, what was alleged in the complaint. And while the complaint was filed to put the railroad on notice of the entire universe of claims that could possibly be brought in this action. And as always happens, some of those claims succeed, some of those claims fail. Some of those can be proven, and some of them can't. In this case, what we could prove were two things. One, that the plaintiffs had asbestosis as a result of their exposure to asbestos. And secondly, we can prove that the plaintiffs had chronic obstructive pulmonary disease as a result of their exposure to diesel exhaust and other toxic substances while they worked for the railroad. And that's not me saying this, Your Honors. That's what the treating doctors of these men have said, that they have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and it's caused by their exposures, at least in part, while they worked for the railroad. So those are the exposures in this case. And it's important for this court to understand that the treating doctors have supported those exposures here.
Why did you fail to make the prima facie case on asbestos issues when you're claiming you had that testimony?
Because, Your Honor, the prima facie filing requirements of the statute are such that these plaintiffs don't meet it. There are doctors out there, there are experts in this case that say that they have asbestosis as a result of their exposure to asbestos, but they do not have the requisite pulmonary function tests that this statute requires so they can meet the prima facie filing requirements of the statute. Before the statute was passed, they had viable FELA claims for their asbestosis. After the statute, they no longer do because they don't meet the requirements. I think it's also important to note that the trial court followed a pretty simple procedure here. The trial court followed a procedure that is followed by trial courts throughout Ohio probably every day. They dismissed some claims that didn't meet the requirements of the law, and they let some claims continue that did meet those requirements. And it's a simple matter of the court deciding which claims that were viable to hear. In this case, the court decided the asbestos claims were not.
So, Mr. Torcello, assuming that you prevail, how does this proceed in front of the judge now that the administrative dismissal has occurred with respect to the asbestos?
Thank you for asking that, Your Honor. I think that in the court's inherent authority to control its own docket, it decided that these claims would be administratively dismissed and it would move forward and try the remaining claims in the lawsuit. And I think the court also would have had authority to send those remaining claims back to the General Division. And I think in some situations, Judge Hanna has done that. Where claims have been brought, Judge Hanna has severed them, and he's sent the remaining claims back to the General Division. In this particular case, he didn't do that. He kept those claims and decided that they would be tried in his court.
And as a matter of evidence then, Is there a motion in limine to avoid any mention of asbestos? Or how does that work since the claims, the asbestos claims have been administratively dismissed?
I don't think, and I am sure, that at the trial of this action, this FELA action for his chronic obstructive pulmonary disease as it relates to diesel exhaust, there would be no mention of asbestos in that case. And that's because these gentlemen, as stated by the criteria of the asbestos bill, have no claims for asbestosis.
So,
they
so
don't meet
the only thing that would be looked at would be the various other substances that have been alleged in the complaint.
That's right, Your Honor. I think the only proof adduced at trial would be that these gentlemen had chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and what caused it. And by the opinions of their own treating doctors, it's been caused by their exposures on the railroad. This court has also addressed the application of this statute's prima facie filing requirements in the Bogle case. And in Bogle, this court was clear that a state can apply its procedures to FELA cases only so far as those procedures do not impair a substantive right of the plaintiff. And in this case, I think Justice Kupp's question to Mr. Pottheiser is pointed. What happens to Mr. Rydell's wrongful death claim? His substantive rights to carry forward his wrongful death claim for his COPD as it relates to diesel exhaust would surely be affected. They would be more than impaired, they'd be eliminated by the application of the statute to those claims. And the same thing can be said for the claims of Mr. Six and Mr. Rydell. If this court were to accept defendant's position and extend the asbestos bill and dismiss the entire case, dismiss all claims, then their substantive rights to go forward with their FELA claim that is completely unrelated to asbestos, as we sit here today, would be more than impaired. It would also be eliminated. This court has gone to some length in the Bogle case and in the Atkinson case to say that House Bill 292 must be interpreted so as not to impair substantive rights of plaintiffs. And that's what this court did in Atkinson. That's what this court did in Bogle. And I would ask that this court do that again and write the rule of law that in an FELA case, this statute must be interpreted so as not to impair the substantive rights of FELA plaintiffs. Because if it does, this entire statute would have been preempted by FELA. And this court has held that it's not. So this court must, I believe, in keeping with the decision in Atkinson, interpret this statute so that it does not impair the substantive rights of the plaintiffs.
Mr. Torsello, under 230793C, where we talk about the administrative dismissal, there's the statement that the court shall administratively dismiss the plaintiff's claim without prejudice, and so on. And later on in that same section, it talks about any plaintiff whose case has been administratively dismissed. Do you see that that language in any way disputes what you have been suggesting to us here?
No, Your Honor. I think, as you pointed out to Mr. Pottheiser, the statute throws those terms around a lot, whether it's claim or cause of action or case or action. The statute uses it willy-nilly, as you said. And I believe it's the job of this court to interpret the ambiguity there and to interpret it so as not to impair the substantive rights of the plaintiff in this case.
Counsel, how many causes of action do you have in this case?
Your Honor, this case was sued on, I believe, 6 causes of action. What is left are 2 claims, one claim for asbestosis and one claim for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
Pardon me, please? One claim for asbestosis.
2 claims remain. One claim was for asbestosis.
And that's been administratively dismissed.
Exactly.
And the only remaining claim is which?
The only remaining claim is that the plaintiffs, through their exposure to diesel exhaust, developed chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And that's what their doctors have opined.
And that is the claim that is the heart of what we're here on.
That is exactly what we're here on, trying to determine if the asbestos bill applies to that claim. Exactly.
And you're seeking what kind of an order from this court?
The order from this court that I would be seeking is for this court to allow the chronic obstructive pulmonary disease of these claims, I'm sorry, those claims of these plaintiffs to continue and to allow the trial court in Cuyahoga County to do what it will with them, to try them or reassign them or use its discretion to do whatever it sees fit in Cuyahoga County. And I would ask this court also to reassert the rule of law that this court said in Bogle, that the substantive rights of FELA plaintiffs cannot be impaired by an interpretation of this statute.
Would you accept a modification to what you just stated to say without any reference to asbestos in regard to the remaining claims?
I believe in this case, Your Honor, that is where we can get, because the asbestosis claims
right.
have already been dismissed.
And even though they have been entwined in those other statements in the complaint, they could be easily taken out, and everything else could proceed without asbestos.
Exactly. Though entwined in the complaint, through discovery and through the accumulation of medical records and reports, that has been clarified. And the reports now, I'm sorry, the claims now are what they are, and that claim is what I just said to Justice O'Connor.
Is there any need to, Judge Gallagher had it laid out correctly, didn't he? So we just need to affirm, or is there something?
I think what this court can say, I think what more this court can say is that in an FELA case where a plaintiff has substantive federal rights that are at issue, this statute cannot be interpreted so as to impair those rights. And in the case of these plaintiffs, in effect, eliminate it if the defendants were to, their position were to prevail today.
Thank you, Mr. Trussello.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Potthauser, you've gone a bit over your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Your Honors, Mr. Torricello spoke about we can't interpret, or this court can't interpret HB 292 to impair a plaintiff's substantive rights. I don't even think that in order to reverse the Court of Appeals and the trial court, you even have to necessarily get that far. I think, I know courts like to rule on the most narrow grounds possible. I think if the court adopts our analysis in terms of what are we talking about in terms of a cause of action, that we're really talking about one cause of action here, I don't think it would be even necessary to get into an extended discussion about impairment of substantive rights, unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.